He's got to keep his elbow in. You know what I mean? Like his,
you know, he's got the chicken wing. I'm like, JT, get it in underneath the ball. You know what I'm saying? And then you'll be consistent with it. But
Bieber has the same problem. Bieber gets a little bit loose.
Oh, yeah, 100%. For the lead. Yes. Forget the three.
This is From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie. Happy people make for a happy business. And now, your hosts, Spencer Linton and Jimmer Fredette.
Guess who's back for more? Episode 2, let's do this. I am Spencer Linton, he is Jimmer Fredette, and we call this show From the Logo, our deep range conversations about life in and well beyond the world of sports. Jimmer, what is good, brother?
Spence, it's a great day. Another great day. Episode 2, so excited. Obviously, episode 1, anybody who listened with KVN knew that it was a great episode. What a good guy he is. Like, we got some real gems from him, right? We got some great content, really great stories. He's just a good dude. We had a great time, had fun. So if you haven't checked it out, make sure you check out episode 1, KVN. But now, back to episode 2. Super excited about our guest today. And let's talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, a Baltimore theme, if you will. Baltimore, shout out to KVN with the Ravens. I got my O's.
That's true.
Because I'm a huge Orioles fan. I grew up as a Cal Ripken fan. But our guest
3,000
played for this team. So we'll get to the nitty gritty of that in just a moment. But once again, because we are still relatively new to this podcast world, we want to remind everyone that our formula and our purpose is pretty simple with what we're trying to do here. It's to uplift, educate, and entertain our listeners and viewers using a bunch of different topics ranging from current events, your life, Jimmer, my life at times, our featured guest lives, certainly. And focusing on topics that center on humanity, physical and mental health, spirituality, faith, sport, and family. Basically, Jimmer, we want everyone to feel a little bit better after they hang out with us.
That's the key. That's the key. I mean, how could you not feel better when you hang out with us, right? Like, I feel better every time I hang out with you, Spence. I mean, I know that for a fact. But, you know, that's the big thing. We just want people to walk away trying to learn something, but also just feeling good about themselves, feeling good about the guest, maybe taking a little nugget of knowledge from our guests. You know, we don't have a whole lot of knowledge to give, but our guests are great, and they are able to shed some light on some of the topics that we have. So super, super fun so far. We hope you enjoyed episode 1. Obviously, episode 2 here is going to be action-packed with our guest, and super excited to get him out here.
The thing that I maybe love the most about this setup that we have going here is the idea of speaking with guests and people who excel at whatever they do, but then realizing in a lot of ways they're just like all of us, Jimmer. They have
people.
All of the same problems.
Yeah.
I can talk to you about what it's like to have your 4-year-old or your 7-year-old wake you up at 2 o'clock in the morning and be staring creepily over you asking for help. And like, you understand what that's like as a dad. Like, and I mean, that's just one little element that relates to our guests, right?
100%. I mean, it happened to me last night. Grayson, she woke up 3 times and she came over to my side of the bed. So I had to bring her up all 3 times. Whitney didn't even hear her. She was dead asleep. I was like, all right, it's my turn to do it anyway. But yes, we are all in the same boat. We understand that there are always, everyone has problems and everyone has things that they have to solve throughout their life. And we get into some of those things and see how they couldn't overcome those challenges, but also talk about the good things that they're excelling at, whatever that may be in any type of field. Obviously we have a lot of sports and athletes that are going to be on this podcast, but we're also going to have business CEOs. We're going to have entertainers. We're going to have everybody, maybe church leaders, whatever it is, we're going to have people on the podcast that can shed some light on their industry, and you can see that they're going through the same problems just in a different field. And we want to talk about it, get to the root of it, and be able to actually, you know, learn something. And I know that from the first episode, I already learned a bunch from KVN and just what he brought to the table. And I know episode 2, we're going to have the same thing.
Let's go. So without further ado, let's get to our opening tip-off and, frankly, our starting lineup, if you will, which features one of the most interesting and, frankly, successful and annoyingly gifted people at that that I've ever met. He's World Series champion pitcher Jeremy Guthrie. I'm telling you, like, he's the friend that whatever you do, he does it well, whether it's golf or basketball or football, certainly baseball, but also in his social circles. Jimmer, he's an ambassador for Major League Baseball in collaboration with the MLB commissioner. He's a father of four, a former mission president for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Houston, Texas, and got called to do that when he was 39 years young. He is the Renaissance man, a sneakerhead, and why don't we throw in part-time Savannah Banana? What doesn't he do?
He does pretty much everything. Like you said, he has a lot of skills, a lot of skill sets. And we're going to talk to about all of them today. We're going to talk to him and see, you know, get into his mind. I want to know exactly who Jeremy is and why he is the way that he is, right? You don't just go into a World Series game, and, you know, in the third game and go win it without having some type of different mindset and understanding who you are, having faith in yourself, understanding the moment and how he's able to capture that moment and be able to shrink it a little bit so it doesn't seem so so big for him. So I want to hear about all these things. I definitely want to hear about his sneakers, and I want to hear about, you know, all the things that he did on his mission as a mission president as well. Those are going to all be great things that we get into today. He's a great dude. I'm super excited to talk to the guy.
We'll speak with Jeremy in roughly 5 minutes, but before we do that, I need to get caught up in your life, Jimmer, and frankly, share some of my own thoughts, because recently I was in beautiful Sandusky, Ohio, home to Cedar Point Theme Park, which
Tommy
features
boy.
Some of the, yes, indeed,
Tommy
features
boy.
Some of the most crazy inventions and accomplishments of modern engineering in roller coastery, if that's a phrase. But I reflected on my life as I was risking my life, or so it felt in some instances. And I was with my 14-year-old Jax for his birthday and just kind of felt this wave of emotion as a dad, because he's my oldest and he's moving into ninth grade, but another school year approaches. And I know that you can relate to this as well as you watch your kids go off to school, but I feel like sometimes I'm broken as a parent. Like I cry so much more now than I ever used to. I never used to cry. And then I had kids. And I feel like I'm broken, Jim. I was like, why am I about to cry at this happy roller coaster theme park with my 14-year-old? I just feel so emotional.
I know. No, I totally get it. I mean, the other day was the first day of school for us, and Taft, he's in first grade. Right. So kindergarten, he's in first grade. He's in this school by himself. He's in the primary school. Wesley has now moved to the intermediate school because she's in third grade. So all three of our kids are kind of in different schools. And Taft comes up to us and he's like, "Hey, Dad, is it okay if we go in the kiss and go lane?" And if you know what the kiss and go lane is, if you've been in primary school, it's basically you drop your kid off and you let him walk to the door by himself. That's what he wanted to do. And I was like, "Taft, are you sure? Like, I am so okay to park and walk you up to the door, right? I would love to do that for you." He's like, "No, Dad, I'm good. I just want to get, you know, just the kiss and go lane. Everyone told me it's easy and we'll just go out and do that." And I was, "Taft, come on, man. Like, it's killing me inside. Can't even see the kid walk into the school." You know, so it's the little things like that, you know, as a parent where you're just like, man, these days are numbered. And that's why you try to cherish it as much as you possibly can. But on pickup, I am there. On pickup, I am standing outside no matter what. I told him, "Not kissing, going. We are not picking you up. I am going to be there and I am going to walk you to the car." That's how it's going to work, Taft. So you got one of the two.
You will hold my hand. You will enjoy this moment.
Yes, 100%. That's what we're going for.
On a tangent, are you a roller coaster guy?
I used to love roller coasters, like lived for them. I loved going to Six Flags, anything as big as the roller coaster could possibly be, I wanted to go on it. As I got older, now every time I go on a roller coaster that, you know, goes in a circle, I come off and I can't even walk straight. You know, all of a sudden my equilibrium is off. So I used to love them, and I I still like them. I still go on them, but I just pay the price more afterwards. So I am with the kids at everything. I'm always trying to get them to go on, you know, the best rides. And right now, Wesley is pretty adventurous. Taff, not as much. But she's been able to go on quite a few things, which has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, let's see you pull up for three from the logo after a double loop and 7-0-G rolls, Jimmer. How accurate is the shot after that?
Airball. Airball. Not even gonna joke. Just absolute airball. I can't think straight most of the time when I get off the roller coasters. But when I'm on them, I love them. When I'm on them, I love them. So I'm like, hey, we'll take the win and we'll pay for it later. And then get a funnel cake or something, you know, or a churro.
Let's do it. I'll say this to close out this conversation. If you are ever in Tommy Boy country, Sandusky, Ohio, and you have a chance to ride something called Top Thrill 2, it's a launch swing coaster. I learned this from my 14-year-old because he's super passionate about it. You go 120 miles an hour, Jimmer. Okay? 120 miles an hour.
Like from zero to 120? Like, is it like a shoot-off?
They swing you. Okay, so they launch you at 74, and then you go reverse and launch you again. So you're going 103 miles an hour, and then you go up this super crazy 400-foot-tall peak spike, and then come back down, and they launch you again to go 120 as you crawl over this 420-foot little pinnacle. It's insanity. It's insane.
16-year-old Jimmer is just jumping for joy right now. Just apps. Big boned Jimmer, who hadn't grown into his body yet, is just absolutely loving hearing that and would have loved going on that roller coaster. Me right now, we'll see.
Not so much.
Back in the day, that would have been a big time fun.
I love it. Hey, we're just a couple minutes away from having Jeremy Guthrie join us, and we need to preface that conversation, of course, with all of his talents, which we have outlined, but also his network, Jimmer. He has ties to this celebrity entourage that includes movie stars like Ant-Man, Paul Rudd, and Ted Lasso, Jason Sudeikis. They're big-time Kansas City Royals fans.
Right.
And then the whole boy band scene. Like, he's got a close friend on the Backstreet Boys named Brian Littrell, yep. And he's got connections with Justin Timberlake and NSYNC. Like, I mean, it kind of begs the question, dude, are you team Backstreet or are you like an NSYNC guy?
You know, I'm going to ask Jeremy this straight up because I am very passionate about this subject. I am an NSYNC guy and I've been an NSYNC guy, you know, for a long, long time. I love Justin Timberlake. I almost got frosted tips because of it. I was thinking about it. Didn't have the right hair for it, but I was thinking about it and I was like, I loved it. I mean, are you kidding me? Tearing up my heart. You know, it's going to be May. I mean, come on. These are classic songs and they did it best. Backstreet Boys are fine. They're great. You know, they had some hits. You know, they're at the Sphere right now. I get it. NSYNC. Okay. NSYNC.
Team NSYNC. I'll say this. People ask me to this day, what are the best concerts you've ever been to? NSYNC is top three. It's the only good thing that's ever happened besides watching you destroy Utah at the Huntsman Center on that campus. It was at Rice-Eccles Stadium. I watched them perform their No Strings Attached tour in the year 2000, and it was so entertaining.
It's magical.
It, yes, it was. Magical. It had no shame. No shame, Jimmer.
Okay. I love it. I love it.
We're here with for
you. I'm with you.
All right, on that super high note, we're going to take our first break, get our frosted tips done.
Yeah.
And
man, people don't know what they're getting into. I just don't think people know what they're getting into with the podcast. All right, just whatever comes, okay? Enjoy.
I love it. Jeremy Guthrie takes on the full court press after this. As you mentioned, Jimmer, how does he get into the right frame of mind to pitch in the World Series? And how did that wide world network of celebrities come to be? From the logo with Jimmer Fredette continues, Jeremy Guthrie on the way. This episode is brought to you by Eddie, the HR software built for small businesses who put people first. At Eddie, we believe work isn't just about payroll or paperwork. It's about people, culture, and the everyday wins that make life meaningful.
Eddie helps leaders spend less time on HR headaches and more time building teams that thrive.
Welcome back to From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette. It is time for the full court press. And our VIP guest is ready to roll or throw down or whatever you want to say. Speaking of, our guest is a World Series champion, a member of the Commissioner's Ambassador Program for Major League Baseball. He went to Stanford, pitched at a high level there. But we should also mention that he married his sweetheart, Jenny Williams, back in 2001. They're a package deal. He is Jeremy Guthrie, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show, Jeremy.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for having me.
All right.
It's great to have you, Jeremy.
Absolutely. And we're super excited about this for a number of reasons. Jimmer and I were talking earlier in the show about boy bands, Jeremy. So we feel like this is an appropriate thing to start with because you have ties to two prominent boy bands, which we'll get into, NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys. But if you got to pick one, brother, okay, we're coming with the high heat. Which boy band you going with? You can only pick one.
Or am I going with them too? There's a big difference there.
That is a big difference. Who are you listening to? Who are you listening to? Which one? You got to pick one. Who are you listening to?
I'm listening to the Backstreet Boys. I ride or die with the Backstreet Boys at all times.
Man.
You know, I was a senior in high school when I first remember hearing a Backstreet Boys song, Quit Playing Games With My Heart.
Wow.
And so, you know, they were first to the dance they can still sing. They can still dominate a stage as they do at the Sphere every weekend for the past 5 weekends now. They can sing. So I love the Backstreet Boys. NSYNC can sing as well. And those guys are fantastic. They just haven't had the longevity that Backstreet has had, which I think... So,
Hey, I'm going to have to disagree. I'm an NSYNC guy. You know, I am an NSYNC guy through and through. So a little tidbit, my sister was Miss Teen New York when she was back in high school. We went to the Miss Teen USA pageant in Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm sure you've been down there, Jeremy, Shreveport. And they had NSYNC, a little band called NSYNC, as the musical guest, and no one knew who NSYNC was at that point. So I got to meet all of them back in the day, and I was like, these guys are going to be huge. And ever since then, I've been a massive NSYNC fan. Love the Backstreet Boys are great too, but I'm rolling with JT. But we can have that argument a little bit later. So,
there's no argument to be had. I'm good with both. For me, it's great. They're not mutually exclusive. You can love both.
That's great.
I love it.
Yeah.
Well, truth be told, I wanted to be Justin Timberlake once upon a time, and there may or may not be a music video of me as a senior in high school still making its way around YouTube, pretending to be Justin Timberlake. Hema knows all about it, our producer, so I'm sure that might make its way into this podcast. But there's a reason we bring this up, because your network is wild, Jeremy. You're friends with one of the Backstreet Boys, Brian. And I saw you recently at a Justin Timberlake concert, and you know him and have had interactions with him. You know actors Paul Rudd and Jason Sudeikis fairly well. Like, the list goes on and on. Obviously, you're connected with all the stars of Major League Baseball. How does a network like that happen, my friend?
Well, I think Jimmer knows, you know, every athlete wants to be an entertainer or a musician, and vice versa. Most entertainers, musicians want to be athletes. And so when you're in that world of sport, you're really granted a lot of really unique opportunities to connect with people that have mutual interest. And so ironically, the way I met the Backstreet Boys was my wife and I were at a concert in Baltimore, and the security for Brian Littrell, his name is Drew, and Drew is from Sandy. Or from South Salt Lake. Cool. And he saw me at the show and actually approached me and said, "Hey, are you Jeremy Guthrie? I know who you are. I'm a fan. Want to say what's up and let you know that I take care of Brian with the Backstreet Boys. If you want a chance to meet him afterward, would love to introduce you to him. He loves baseball and let's connect you." So it was through a Utah connection that I was even introduced to the Backstreet Boys. And from there, you know, we hit it off. And that was, I think, 2010. And he came to a few baseball games. I went to a few more concerts. They were touring at the time with New Kids on the Block. So it was NKTBSB.
Nice.
NKT, whatever. You got the letters. And so I think that's how it collides, right? A lot of times you have guests at the field who will come. Paul Rudd is as big of a Kansas City sports fan as there is in the world. And you know how it goes from there. So anyways, it's been really enjoyable. They're great people. They're down to earth. And when you get a chance to meet some celebrities like that, and yeah, they're really such good people, you just make a deep connection.
That's super cool. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. You get to be able to meet some really cool people, you know, be in our position, just be an athlete, them wanting to watch games, like you said, vice versa. We want to be each other. So we understand that. And my one little interaction I had with Justin Timberlake, he actually presented, him and Aaron Rodgers presented my ESPY to me when I was able to win Collegiate Athlete of the Year. And so it's JT, Aaron Rodgers. I get up there, I'm just starstruck, you know what I mean? Take the award. Then afterwards, we're walking off the stage and JT's like, "Hey, Jimmer, we did it, man. We did it. We won the award." I was like, "Yep, I guess we did, JT. Appreciate you, man. Let's go back and hang out. Have a good time." So it was a lot of fun.
There's not a better dude than Justin Timberlake. What a really good dude. Like, really genuinely cares about people and just has fun. And that doesn't surprise me one bit that he's joking with you like that. And he loves to shoot. So I'm sure he's asking you for some shooting. Some shooting tips.
He's got to keep his elbow in. You know what I mean? Like his, you know, he's got the chicken wing. I'm like, JT, get it in underneath the ball. You know what I'm saying? Then you'll be consistent with it. But
Bieber has the same problem. Bieber gets a little bit loose.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Get him out there.
Great stuff.
It's so great, Jeremy. I mean, obviously, I want to dive into your baseball career a little bit here. You know, you're a World Series winner with the Kansas City Royals. I mean, what an unbelievable experience that is. And not only were you a World Series winner, you're a big part of that. Like, you won a game in the World Series, game three, started in the World Series. Like, I want to dive into that a little bit. I want to talk about your daily routine going into a game of the World Series. Does that change from a regular season game then going into the World Series? Kind of want to go through your routine and then just talk about your mindset of going into that game and how you actually really felt.
Yeah, well, I think ideally what I felt I learned through my career, and I played 15 years professionally. That was preceded by 3 years collegiately. It started at BYU in 1997. And following 2 years as a missionary for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in Spain, I transferred to Stanford and played 2 more seasons there. So, I consider my college is obviously not professional, although it's getting a lot closer to this in this day and age. 18 years of really competitive of pitching. And I think what I learned was that if I could approach every practice and game, with the same intensity to some extent and the same focus, that it would make the more important moments perhaps a little bit more relaxed and more consistent for me. And so when someone asks, what did you do before game 7? The answer is very easy. It's exactly what I did before games 1 through 33 in the regular season and every other game I pitched, even in the playoffs. And that was, the same routine of watching video, going through the lineup that I would anticipate facing, going back, watching 3 or 4 at-bats of my interactions against those hitters, and then finding a similar pitcher to myself, a right-handed pitcher with similar pitch selection, and watch 2 or 3 games. And I'm just trying to pick up any little detail, right? Do I see any pitch that seems to give a guy a particular problem? Is there a hot zone that I want to avoid? And create a game plan in my mind that then hopefully, if I'm on top of my game that night, I can execute it. And so that was the basic preparation, the more detailed things. I always like to mow my lawn. That was talked about. I always mowed my lawn before every start, assuming it lined up.
That's the great.
I used to pole before every game. So
there you go.
Those were things I did as well. But the preparation, the mindset really wasn't any different. And I think we gained a lot of confidence when our preparation is consistent. And so that can be applied, obviously. I'm applying it to sport, but it's applied to anything from your job that's not on an athletic field, to parenting, to your personal development and growth. Like, when you're consistent, you feel good about yourself. That's why those who, go to the gym and they want to be physically fit, they're like, I want to get in a routine where I jog or walk every morning, that I want to be doing these weights or whatever it is. And 3-4 weeks into that, they begin to feel a lot more confident in what they're doing, and the results begin to come really fast, from my experience.
Jeremy Guthrie, World Series winner with the Kansas City Royals in 2014, is on From the Logo. You mentioned just the consistency and the routine involved there. And we could spend 10 minutes alone just talking about what goes into mowing your lawn properly so that you can be in the right mindset to pitch in the World Series or any start. But we'll save that maybe for later. However, I did want to just talk about the emotions, because a playoff baseball game is very different than your typical regular season start. Then you take it up another notch when it is in the World Series. And we should credit you with the big win in the ALCS too. I mean, pressure is on. So how do you handle the added emotions of a fan base that is super excited that their team is in the World Series and an opponent fan base that wants you to, you know, give up 10 home runs and be the worst pitcher ever? So how do you have just the emotional aspect? How do you handle that dynamic in a pressure pack situation like that?
I think most athletes are a little bit different. You approach it individually is would be my answer. And that is, you know, some people, I can see Jimmer making huge shots, right? The intensity, the fire that he played with. If you went and watched me in a game, whether it was, you know, a World Series game or a regular season, I maybe showed emotion once or twice my entire career. And that's,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And that's because there's a different fuel that drives every individual. So for me, how does I handle the emotion of a big game? I handled it kind of as cool, calm, and collected, in that sense of there was no outward kind of visibility to it. And yet I had a teammate who was telling me, listen, man, World Series, he had pitched in the World Series before and pitched in the playoff multiple times. And he said, man, you're going to be so amped up. You're going to have an extra 3 or 4 miles per hour velocity. You're going to have this, that, and the other. And when I got out there, I threw my first few pitches and it was 90 miles per hour, 92 miles per hour, what I normally threw early on in the game. There was no change. And I recognized, like, for me, the fact that it was a World Series game didn't give me any extra, like, emotional fire that then caused me to work harder or throw harder. It was actually the exact same thing. And I think that's what fueled me. It made me feel more comfortable in who I was to compete that way. And yet some of my favorite athletes, I think, you know, from Jimmer on, my favorite athletes are the ones that are different than me. The ones that actually outwardly are fired up. Tiger Woods, Tom Brady, Rafa Nadal. Those are three of my, and Michael Jordan. Those are my four favorite athletes of all time. And when you watch those guys, they are very emotional, right? Fist pumping and getting the crowd into it. And I think I love that about them, because it's not who I am, but I feel the emotion. They bring me into it with them. And I really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's so fun. I feel like, you know, for me, I definitely was not afraid to give a yell or two when I was out there hitting the shot or playing ball. But yeah, you just have just an even keeled temperament. And that's a testament to you. I mean, that's, you know, to be able to go out into a World Series game and be able to take it like a normal, you know, actual regular season game is a skill. That is not easy to do, because most people are amped up. Most people are, you know, getting out there and like, man, this is a big deal, right? This is a big deal. I understand. So I think that's pretty incredible to be able to do that. But a little fun question here real quick. Who is the most intimidating batter that you ever faced, and why? Why was that, you know, why were they so intimidating?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's different ways to ask about who is the most difficult hitter, who was this, that, or the other. But the most intimidating was Frank Thomas, a.k.a.
Yes.
Frank Thomas, when I was, I was 14 years old, Frank Thomas was a back-to-back AL MVP.
Right.
It was 92, 93. This guy played football at Auburn. He played baseball at Auburn. I don't know his height exactly, but I'm going to guess he's 6'5", 6'6", probably about 260, 270.
Big guy.
Frank Thomas at the end of his career, 2007. I felt like, even though I was standing on a mound, that he was still taller than me. I felt like he was three times as big as me. Yeah. And that if I threw a pitch anywhere near the strike zone, that he was going to obliterate the baseball or get it right off my forehead. So Frank Thomas, hands down, was the most intimidating player I faced.
That's so funny. I actually saw him in the airport not long ago. I never met Frank Thomas or anything, but I saw him in the airport and I recognized him. He was intimidating just walking past him. Like, so I get it. Understood. That's a great answer. I love that.
As you pointed out, anybody that's nicknamed the Big Hurt should typically set off a few alarms in your mind. That is wild. Now, we've talked about how the pinnacle of your baseball professional career, which was winning the World Series with the Royals. And I mean, that's something that you hold on to forever. And the relationships and the memories that come from that are unforgettable. But Jeremy, you've been outspoken about learning incredible lessons through the hardest moments of your professional career as well. And so as you look back and juxtapose the highest of highs with the World Series win and some of those hardest lessons, what do you consider the hardest lesson you ever learned as a pro? And what did that do for you in your life?
Really good question. I think, you know, what makes the highs even higher and makes them sweeter are the struggles. And I think that's valuable for all of us to remember, athletes or not, right? Is that the struggle brings the greatest joy. The storm brings greater fulfillment when you make it over the top and overcome obstacles. So I think that's, you know, like anybody, most of my career, I would say, you know, balanced out, I probably had more lows than highs, but the highs were really high and the lows were really low. And you learn to endure through those. You learn to have hope. And I think a lot of players in this day and age talk about process and what goes into their preparation. And those are things I was trying to put into action 25 years ago, is despite my struggles, really the minor leagues was the lowest of lows for me coming into the professional baseball. Right. I was expected to do well. And I really started off on a high note. My first 10 starts, I was as good a pitcher in the minor leagues as there was. And so the team said, hey, just give us a few more weeks or maybe a month in the minor leagues and we'll bring you up to the big leagues. And they moved me up a level. And for the next month, 2 months, really, I struggled as much as any pitcher was struggling. And so I went from, you know, one of the best to one of the very worst, and really labored for the next 2.5 seasons in that kind of low, low part of my career. And so that really, you know, tested me. There was times that playing baseball didn't seem appealing any longer, and that it never felt like you could get over the hump. Maybe it wasn't worth the effort and time, but the process I had developed was one I enjoyed in reality. And so I enjoyed trying to become better as a pitcher. And so despite how much I was struggling, the thought of improving and seeing improvement is kind of what gave me hope and belief that I could do it. And I get fulfillment out of hard work as well. I really feel like that's a big part of anybody's success, is do they learn the value of hard work, consistency, as we've mentioned. And for me, that brings me a lot of fulfillment. I'm a doer. My wife is much more of a feeler. And so, you know, doing for me makes me feel joy and happy.
Right.
And so if I'm busy and working hard and grinding, in reality, that actually makes me feel good. Sometimes it makes me feel as good as a good outcome. You know, a win in a World Series. Sometimes the worst part of it was just as fulfilling as the actual win.
Yeah, for sure. No, that makes a lot of sense to me. I understand that too. I love the work part of it. Like I used to love being in the gym by myself. Like that was some of my favorite memories, is just me in the gym by myself, working on my game, working on what I needed to get better at, having my headphones in and kind of just getting lost in it. Right. You don't think about anything else. You're just literally thinking about the task at hand. You see yourself progressing and getting better. And that's amazing to hear. And I also had struggles in the beginning. We've talked about it a little bit on Prods before, but I've also had struggles in the beginning of my career as well, similar to you. And it's really hard, but I want to know, you know, specifically, what did you have to draw from to be able to get out of those difficult times and continue to stay positive mentally? You know, was a faith a big factor in that? Cause for me, it was like faith was a big factor for me, you know, prayer, those types of things. How did you, you know, mentally draw yourself? I know you're a doer and you're out there working, but mentally, how did you stay prepared and stay positive and stay ready?
I think there's two things I would draw upon that helped me through those moments or through those periods of time. First and foremost is what you talked about, faith and identity. Throughout my career, and even when I was young, I felt like as much as I enjoyed athletics and as much as most people knew the Guthrie family as athletes, my two older brothers each played 3 sports, you know, received accolades specifically for football. And we were a well-known family in our small Oregon communities, that as much as that's what we were known for, I never truly identified or felt like I was a baseball player or a football player or a basketball player. I felt like I really was who I was, which was, you know, the more most core truth that I believe in is that I was a child of God. And I think that was the core of what helped me is whether I was good at a sport or not good at a sport, whether I was a good student receiving good grades or not, that was never who I was. And it was never going to I was never going to identify as that alone. And so when the struggles come on a court or on a field, you don't feel like a failure because in reality, that's not who you are, but it's what you do. That was really important to me. So that would be number one. Number two was a lesson I learned when I was a sophomore in high school, I believe. A coach of ours showed us a video, and it was of Dick Vitale, the legendary broadcaster for ESPN.
The best.
And he was sharing an experience he had with Michael Jordan, and it was when Michael Jordan had retired from basketball and was now playing baseball. And he was explaining why he felt in his mind he was not a failure or an embarrassment, whereas Sports Illustrated had written a big article by Stephen Wolf that said pretty much he was embarrassing and tarnishing his legacy. And Michael Jordan reflected the words of, you know, one of the most iconic coaches of all time, John Wooden, in which he said, my definition of success is different than most. My definition of success is to give my best at what I'm doing, and I'm doing that. He said, so despite not getting hits or making errors, that doesn't mean I'm a success or a failure. And John Wood put it very simply. He said, success is the peace of mind that is a direct result of the self-satisfaction that comes from knowing you've done your best to become the best you are capable of becoming. In theory, it's just you are successful when you have a goal and give your best effort to achieve it or to become something. And so those two things were the anchors that in both the good times and more importantly during the struggles were able to keep me in a place of a good mindset, a positive attitude, and more importantly, to keep working, because it's only when you stop working that you really truly fail. If you stop giving your best or you stop fighting for what it is you want to become or want to achieve, that's the only way you can fail is to stop.
Clearly, faith was a very, very grounding principle for you, as it is for so many. And I can relate to you and Jimmer and so many thousands of our watchers and listeners that have that same concept in their mind. However, when the bullets start flying in real life and you are in the midst of a professional baseball career and Jimmer in his basketball career, and I mean, those adversities strike and the frustrations, you know, what is it that you would maybe say to yourself as a go-to phrase or a remembrance that put you back on that, okay, faith-based ground element to bring yourself back to steady ground?
Well, two things that Jimmer and I are, you know, are really blessed to have is a companion that is a stabilizing force. So
yes.
Sometimes it's a lot less about what we tell ourselves,
yeah,
or about what our wives or a parent or a best friend, you know, for us, it's a wife that can be a stabilizing factor, someone that can bring us back to eternal truths and important principles that guide our lives. So I would say things that my wife told me were probably more valuable than the things I told myself, because in reality, if I go back, you know, negative self-talk is something we hear so much about today, but maybe in 20 years ago, it wasn't discussed as often. But I doubt that I said very many positive things to myself when I was not performing well. And so I was relying upon Jenny to be that person for me. And clearly from a spouse that loves and supports you to God, who we know loves us, if we can find those words, those ones can become as valuable as anything. And I think those are probably ones I relied on more than my own words.
Incredible insight from Jeremy Guthrie. This is From the Logo. Some of our watchers and listeners might not know that you called a timeout in your life and your travels and your doing to go and serve a mission as a mission president for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the Texas Houston South Mission, affectionately known to your missionaries as THSM. But Jeremy, why did you feel like at the age of 39, you had the opportunity and felt like you were in a good position to call that timeout and go for 3 years and be in charge of a huge group of missionaries in Texas?
Well, I think first and foremost, the Guthries did not call a timeout.
That's right. Guthries had a timeout called on them.
We were charged with a technical foul. We were not calling timeout ourselves.
You're like, that's funny.
Well said.
Yeah, that's very true.
And I think that's a valuable question. A lot of people ask, you know, how is it that you become a mission president? How can I be one? I had never even considered actually how that was done. So I actually had no idea at the time, but really it's done, number one, obviously it's done through inspiration and impressions, but the kind of the more nuts and bolts of it is that general authorities, you know, our beloved prophet, apostles, as they travel, members of the Quorum of the 70, as they go and teach the gospel of Jesus Christ, as they interact with members worldwide, they're always searching. They're always thinking about and meeting people that are committed to serving the Lord, and they're trying to follow impressions. And so that's, you know, that's how the thousands of, you know, stake presidents each year are chosen and called. That's how mission leaders are chosen and called. And that's really how all callings, all the way down to the most simple and basic of responsibilities in our church, it's through that kind of impression. And so the point is I didn't volunteer. We didn't volunteer for it. Yeah. We never on our radar. We never wanted to do it per se.
Yeah.
But doing it, you know, it was a humbling invitation that was extended to us. It was Elder David Bednar who reached out to us unexpectedly, right after I had retired. I think it was maybe 4 months after I had retired playing baseball in 2017. And he spent time with my wife and I and got to know us, asked us a number of questions, and then said, you know what, I'm calling. And he stated this right up front. He said, I'm calling you because we believe it could be the right opportunity to invite you and your wife to serve, and your family for that matter, as mission leaders. And so he was up front with that. And then he said, listen, if it's the right time and it's the right moment and the Lord would have this, someone from the first presidency, at the time it was President Nelson, President Irene, and President Uchtdorf, somebody will call you back and they'll extend you a call to do that. And they'll ask if you're willing to do it. And if not, then you won't hear from anyone for a short time and you can go on doing the things that you do. So
yeah.
President Uchtdorf later called us and asked us if we would be willing. And humbly we were. And we recognized that it would be challenging and difficult, but it would be very fulfilling and bring us closer to the Lord. And so, yes, from 2018 to 2021, we left our home in Portland, Oregon. We sold the home that we were living in, and we moved to Sugar Land, Texas, where we would serve with nearly 600 missionaries over the next 3 years and do so under the more normal circumstance that we were all accustomed to, as well as during about a year and a half of COVID, where we were all, you know, very much our lifestyles were altered completely as to how we lived and operated in our own little towns and cities.
Yeah, I was going to kind of hit that a little bit, but first of all, just give the viewers, you know, maybe not everyone knows exactly what a mission president does or what that entails. Give us a little bit of a synopsis of like what a mission president does on a day-to-day basis, what it entails, the missionaries, obviously, that you are over. And then we can go into a little bit and talk about how your time did change a little bit during that COVID period and how the service had to change for you and your missionaries.
Yeah, really valuable. So in the world, there are over 70,000 young missionaries, as well as, I'm not sure, maybe 5,000 to 10,000 couples who give completely of themselves. They dedicate 18 months up to 2 years for the younger missionaries, and anywhere between 6 months and 2 years for the couples that choose to go out and serve. And they're put all throughout the world, and they share the gospel of Jesus Christ. They serve in the community, and they're young. And so each year, new families are asked to go and preside over these missionaries. We had about 160 at any given time. And so someone needs to take care of them. We would take care of them physically, emotionally, and spiritually. And that was our responsibility. Essentially, we were the surrogate mother and father of these young people for that period of time. And so a mission leader is directing the growth and learning and conversion of young missionaries, and then helping them to find the joy and fulfillment that comes from serving others and sharing the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so there's a responsibility to train them, to care for them, to love them, and to together to experience the joy of gathering those who are seeking Jesus Christ in their life. So that's what a mission president and the mission leaders do. It's a three-year responsibility. You're expected to leave everything behind, quit your job or retire from it. In my case, I didn't have one, so that was more convenient.
Made it easy.
Yeah, made it easy. A lot of times, mission leaders will go with kids. Sometimes they'll be retired empty nesters. In our case, we had three kids. And so those are the responsibilities, and kind of the day-to-day is whatever you make of it. It's whatever it takes, whatever you feel is right to strengthen the faith in Christ of your young missionaries and help them to go and do the same for other people. And yeah, really fulfilling with a ton of growth. I tell people it's a 24-hour-a-day job. And I think that's probably hard for anyone to comprehend what a 24-hour-a-day job means until you're in the middle of it. But it's every bit of 24 hours. I think because I was younger, because I'm kind of a guy that likes to, you know, I'm up late, up early. I think I averaged probably 4.5 hours of sleep for three.
Jeez.
And so
can't do that.
I guess mine was a 19.5-hour-a-day job. Is for the 4.5 hours I slept, I really was sleeping.
I was out. You're out.
Yeah. But it's relentless. It's never ending. It's constant. And in reality, it's overwhelming in many cases that you're not able to do it. You and your wife and those who are helping, counselors and everyone else that's supporting you, you're not really able to do it. And so quickly, just like young missionaries learn, I learned it as a missionary in Spain, you can't do it on your own. And you quickly rely on the source of ultimate strength to be able to do the work that you're asked to do.
Listen, I you probably didn't have a lawn to mow to get yourself mentally right for a lot of the challenges that you faced as a mission president. And then to add to the fun, you and your wife, towards the end of your mission, correct me if I'm wrong, are expecting your fourth child. And so now you're adding another child to your own family. How in the world did you and Jenny balance that of running a mission and now you're going to have another baby?
When we were being interviewed by Elder Bednar, my wife shared that. She said, you know, Elder Bednar, we feel like there's still another baby to come in our family. We felt that really strongly and right. Anticipate that. Is that a problem? And he said, no, not at all. You know, you continue to live according to what you know is right for your family, and having a baby on the mission, if that happens, is not a problem whatsoever. So my wife actually had a miscarriage early on in the mission. And then towards the end, Lucy was born February of 21, just four and a half months before we returned back to Oregon at the completion of our service. And it adds a really tough dynamic in many ways, right? It was, I think the missionaries look back on it fondly and are probably excited to remember that, you know, Sister Guthrie physically grew and especially a baby came. You know, missionaries got to see the baby and obviously interact with Lucy those last few months. So it was exciting. I think she was really the mission mascot. There was a hashtag, do it for Lucy. So
love it.
But you know, for Jenny, it was really hard. I know that because you go from, well, number one, it's just hard to be pregnant. And for her, that was no different. The physical toll, the emotional toll, that mothers go through that we can't even speak to. It's like, you know, crazy for us to even attempt to describe them. But those were real for her, feeling as though now she's apart from the mission, just the stresses that we had as a couple serving and leading together. And now you throw on all the challenges and the emotional and physical fatigue of being pregnant. For her, it was really hard to do both. She would say that she, you know, wasn't as engaged, but she was. It just was really different. She went from maybe being the more stereotypical mission leader, being at zone conferences and a part of interviews and out with missionaries in their apartments, to more of one that ministered via Zoom, which became a thing. It was a real big blessing that she could still have deep interactions with missionaries over Zoom or just on the phone. And she did a lot of studies with them one-on-one, which I know was a greater blessing to them than seeing her with, you know, 60 missionaries at a big conference. And so that's how she served the last, geez, you know, 9+ months. She served in that way. And I know that the missionaries that she was able to individually work with, not all of them, of course, but I know that they were deeply impacted by her service, even though it was different than what it had looked like the previous 18 months.
Obviously that's a big sacrifice. And we understand that. And, you know, we appreciate it. I know the missionaries obviously appreciate it. The people of Houston, Texas appreciated it. So thanks for that service and for kind of sharing your story a little bit with the, you know, in your mission field. And we only have a couple more questions for you. So just quick ones here. I just wanted to know, first of all, Jeremy, what's the state of your incredible shoe collection right now? Like, how many shoes do you got? What's going on? Like, let's get to the important stuff. How many shoes do you have right now? What's your favorite? Like, give me a little bit of insight on what's going on there.
You know, we recently moved from Oregon to Kansas City, and you know, a move will cause an individual to really assess what they own and what they have and its importance in their life. And so I would say we are a team that is shedding salary and trying to really reduce where we're at. And so what was a very solid shoe collection of probably nearly 1,000 pairs is probably dwindled down to a few hundred, which is still way too many.
That's still a lot, but
10 of them fit in a Home Depot extra large box for me. I wear a size 13. So
yeah, me too. Oh,
I should have pulled out the jewel of the collection, the signed Jimmer Fredette Spaldings that I have. Hey,
the Spaldings. We were talking about that pre-meeting. Those Spaldings, don't wear them. They might tear up on you, but they're a classic item.
They are. So I'd say I have around a few hundred. You know, people ask all the time, what's your favorite? The most iconic is the Air Jordan.
Yeah.
And this is one from 1985. So this right here is 40 Jeez. Years old in great condition. It's been worn, but just phenomenal condition. So I like the old tags are kind of cool.
Oh, look yeah.
They have.
That's unbelievable.
So this is one of my prized shoes. And this one's more of a collector's item. This is a Air Jordan 3.
Gold.
Made for Spike Lee, the legendary
director
actor.
Jeez. And
so when he won his Oscar, they made Jordan Brand made a pair of shoes for him. Super limited, probably less than 20 of them in the world. And I was able to get my hands on a pair of these. And so one of my favorite pairs. And I have a Spike Lee signed baseball as well. Being a big Yankees fan, it would be at the games when we pitched against the Yankees quite a bit. And so at one point I went and approached him and I'd had a good game against the Yankees. And he's like, oh man, you took down my Yankees. I said, well, would you find a pair of balls for me? So he signed a cool ball, Spike Lee. Take it easy on my Yankees, Spike Lee.
That is so great. What a story.
Far fewer shoes. The nice thing is both of my sons, my oldest wears a 13, my youngest is a 12, but willing to wear a 13. So all the shoes that I used to love and care about and wear, I've kind of reduced what I wear from, you know, 50 different shoes down to by 10. And so the other ones I don't wear, I just give them to my kids now and they like that.
Man. That's,
very
that's
practical
nice.
Approach. Yeah, if your sons have the same size feet. Love that's that. You're also doing some great work with designing custom cleats, and that's fun to watch. And speaking of cleats, I introduced you as a member of the Commissioner's Ambassador Program with Major League Baseball. And so naturally, you're in that role now. So because you are the Renaissance man, Jeremy, what's next for you, both in that role with Major League Baseball and just generally in life?
Well, I don't know what's next. I'm sure it'll be some kind of surprise, but things I'm doing currently are I'm working with the Kansas City Royals as a broadcaster. So I get to do between 20 and 40 games on the television broadcast. In fact, this week I'm working, we're playing against the Texas Rangers. Four big wins for the Royals are three games above 500, four games out of the wild.
Playing well.
Chase down the Yankees.
They're chasing the Yankees. I was looking at the standings the other day, and I'm not happy with how the Yankees have slipped. But
the Yankees have played well lately.
They have, yeah.
Literally a good team. You can only struggle for so long. So I do that. The Commissioner's Ambassador Program, people ask all the time, what is it? There's 20 or so of us former players, retired, that are part of the Ambassador Program. And what we do is we have a presence at all Major League events. And Major League Baseball has a number of events, right? From spring training to the Little League World Series Classic game, which happened this weekend, to regular season games in Japan this year. And in each of those events, Major League Baseball always has a component of the week that involves charitable contributions to the community, speaking engagements, meet and greets. There's just all kinds of events and activations that happen. And with active players, it's really hard for them to ask of active players to come and do things. They do some things inevitably, but to have the ambassadors travel with them, you know, we get shot all over the place and go do appearances, connect with fans and businesses all over the area where the game or the event is happening. So it's just a really good way for us to build the game through on the backs of former players. And then we also are able to make great connections with current players and be able to just support them, be a strength to them. We even have a, when you help someone, what is that called?
Mentor.
A mentor. They have a mentor program they're beginning. And a lot of us are involved in that. And so it's really all about building the game, strengthening the communities in which the game is played, and being an ambassador allows them to do that much more effectively.
Jeremy, such a great conversation that broached a ton of really important topics that we're super excited about and feel deeply about. We thank you for your time and your busy schedule. Wish you the best of luck on your calls with the Kansas City Royals and as an ambassador for Major League Baseball. We're going to call a timeout for now. When we return, Jimmer takes on some listener questions in open gym. But for the moment, we thank you, Jeremy, for hanging out with us.
You guys are great. Hey, thank you so much. And, all the best. We'll see you guys somewhere down the road. I'm sure we'll see you at the Marriott Center, seeing some big
things here. It's going to be a fun year.
Thanks so much, Jeremy. Great stuff. From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette continues after this. Today's show is powered by Eddy, because good work deserves to be celebrated. Eddy makes HR simple so small businesses can focus on what really matters, their people.
From hiring and onboarding to payroll and culture, Eddy helps teams run smoothly and reminds us that behind every business, there's a story worth celebrating.
Let's keep this show rolling and open things up to our listeners, specifically with your submitted questions from social media straight for Jimmer today. We call it Open Gym, where everybody can take their shot. But I feel like inevitably, I'm going to have some people again ask about why the Orioles have. I mentioned I'm a fan. Jeremy Guthrie pitched for the Orioles, one of the five major league teams he pitched for. So I felt a connection to the O's and to Jeremy. So for this segment, Jimmer, the hat's going back on, brother.
I love the hat. I mean, Camden Yards, right? Like,
yes.
We love it. We love it. We love Jeremy. We love how he just presented himself and had just such a great pod. And we're giving him homage by wearing the hat. I mean, okay. Let's be honest.
Hi, it's pretty straightforward. Before we get into question number one, I do need to address something pertinent and pressing. It is a growing trend on the great social media platform of TikTok, and that is of the several high-level impressions that your wife, the beautiful Whitney Fredette, has now put out there, led off by the Minions. When did this start to take off, Jimmer?
You know, she's been doing impressions for a long time and we didn't think anything of it, right? She can do a bunch of accents. She does. She can impersonate people really well. She can hear it and then impersonate it. And all of a sudden she pulls out this Minions one day, like out of nowhere. And I was like, what is going on here? What is this? I was like, that is the best Minions impression. I've never heard anybody do a Minions impression, first of all. And then second of all, that is incredible. I'm like, that was, and it was just stashed, right? Like we hadn't heard from it in a long time. And then, you know, a little social media TikTok comes on. We're starting to post a little content. She's getting a little following. She's like, and I was like, let's do some impressions, right? And I was like, let's do it. And she hit the Minions one and we posted it and it just climbed. And now it's about 3 million views right now, 500,000 likes, and she's up to almost 10,000 followers, and everyone wants the Minions. Were actually the Illumination Studios. They sent us, like, she was a natural, you know what I mean? Like, she's in with the Minions right now, and it is pretty impressive. No, it's been fun. She's a talented lady. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, we're going to need to feature at least one of those impressions on the pod at some point in the very near future.
I've already told her we'll get her on as a guest. And yes, she knows. So she's preparing.
Listen, I can do a few, but it's not like
Whitney's. You have some good ones. Okay. You have some good ones.
You know, I'm trying. Like, you know, I'll keep trying. We'll have an impression off. Okay.
There you go.
We'll let the people of course the Minions is going to win, but like maybe one of my others can keep up with how talented she is. But fantastic stuff.
It was fun.
Tell her to keep it up. Okay, now for the questions in open gym. And our first submission comes in from @councilman_jam. Fantastic handle from a fantastic show, Parks and Rec. How do you think the advent of more analytics in college basketball would have changed your college career? The sheet says, shoot it from the logo.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is now, right? Like, if you go to a lot of these college practices and NBA practices, they have almost like a 4-point line now. So they have like a line that goes across the gym that is, they want spacing. So they put that spacing out there on purpose so that we can have driving lanes, drive and kick. Everything's more open, more space. And you know, they have it out there so that you can shoot from further. So they're like practicing shooting from further out now. And you know, that was something that obviously I did naturally. So a little bit ahead of my time there as far as, you know, being able to shoot it from deep. And at this point, it would have just been normal. It would have been like, people are like, hey, yeah, that's fine to shoot. We want you to shoot that. And it wouldn't have felt so weird at the time, you know, as it was at the time. So definitely would have helped my game. But I may not have stood out quite as much because people are shooting it from a little further back. But I was definitely ahead of my time and like think I have a little part of that.
Hey, a from the logo pioneer in many ways.
That's right.
In the game and on this podcast.
Okay. That's right.
Next question comes from @error_Gordon12. And they ask, was there an opposing gym you played in that was underrated?
Yeah, there's some really great gyms out there. We played in the Mountain West. So at that point, there was always great. My favorite one to play in was the Pit. You know, I don't know if people know much about the Pit. So, I mean, people that are BYU fans obviously do that go there. But it is literally, they call it the Pit because you walk down into the stadium and it's like a massive ramp. Like you're just walking down for like a half a mile, it feels like. And you get down there and it's like a tin roof, right? So you're there and it's just everything is echoing. So it's not a huge arena. It's packed every time. And then they are loud and they're mean, right? They like to yell some stuff at you. And I used to love that. I used to stand right next to the student section before the game, just so I could hear everything that they were saying. Cause that's what I wanted. I wanted fuel. So I loved playing there. We didn't win every time there. You know, like they beat us in that gym. So it was fun. It was always going to be a tough battle. We knew that it was a fun game. And, but I loved playing there cause the atmosphere was amazing.
Who was the name of their point guard that was so good? Was it Darius?
Gary. His last name is Darius Gary. Yep.
Yes.
He was really good. He was a really good player.
He wasn't you, though.
Appreciate that, Spence. Appreciate that.
All right. Final question in open gym from @RoyalCoug. What's it like to have Cougar Nation, of course, a reference to BYU fans, twist your name into a saying and quote, say, let's Jimmer this voting poll, which means essentially overwhelm it and go win this online vote, whatever it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It got turned into a verb for sure. Like my name just did naturally. And it's been fun, right? Like there's a lot of sayings out there where people are just like, hey, I just Jimmered that test or, you know, I just Jimmered, you know, whatever it is. And it's funny, you know, I like it. You know, I just hope that they use it in the right context. There's some people out there that don't, and you know, you gotta get with the game, right? You gotta make sure you're using it correctly if you're gonna use it. So, but other than that, it's been fun to see it get changed into a verb every once in a while. So I appreciate that, Cougar fans. Appreciate that.
Your name is a verb, Jimmer. It's a verb.
It can be.
We live in that reality. So great. All right. Great question submitted today. And I guess, Jimmer, this is your time to remind everybody that if they want to get involved in the program and ask some more, you have the avenue to do so.
Yeah. If you'd like to submit some questions for me, Spence, our guests, you know, on the next show, just follow us on social media at JimmerFTL. And you can make sure you send those questions using the hashtag #OpenGymFTL. Make sure you do that. We want to hear your questions and our guests want to hear your questions. It's always a fun time for us.
Especially if you want to talk about roller coasters, boy bands, frosted tips, or you know maybe how a name becomes a verb. Okay, the possibilities are endless.
Jimmer those questions, guys. Jimmer them.
Yes. Oh, still to come, the 3x3 update when From the Logo with Jimmer Fredette, presented by Eddie, continues in just a moment. This break is sponsored by Eddie, the HR software with a soul. We're not just building tools to manage people. We're helping businesses create workplaces where people feel seen, valued, and inspired.
Eddie is proud to support the stories on From the Logo because the stories we share celebrate the soul. Kyle Van Noy and his foundation supporting foster care, Jeremy Guthrie, who is constantly serving people in every aspect of his life. It just fits together because Eddie is about people and the everyday wins that make work meaningful.
Throw it up, Jimmer. Fourth quarter from the Logo right now. Fourth quarter. And it's
always throwing the fours up.
Fittingly, USA Basketball 3x3 update. GM Jimmer has the latest on the drive to gold in 2020. You laugh, but it's real.
Gosh.
It's very real.
Just making up nicknames on the fly on me. Gosh.
He's got the latest on his 3x3 teams across the globe, plus your weekly rule of the game to get more acclimated with one of the newest Olympic sports. So, Jimmer, where do you want to start this update?
Okay. So we had a tournament. I'll start with our team. Team Miami was just out in Lausanne, Switzerland. Unbelievably beautiful. One of the most beautiful places I've been to. I've played there. It's right on Lake Geneva. French Alps are in the background. You're right on the water playing. The only thing about Switzerland is that it's super expensive. I don't know if anyone's been there, but it is. I literally got a bottle, water bottle this big, and it was $20. And I am not joking.
What?
I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe it. I was like, how do people live here? But unbelievably beautiful. So I understand why people live there, and it's great. They did really well. They actually ended up taking second in the tournament, which was great. They had a great run. Like I said before, you're not going to win every tournament that you play in, but they gave themselves a chance, and they lost to, of course, the team that they lost to the previous tournament, the Serbia team. Oop. And that's going to be a recurring thing. You're going to hear Oob a lot during these segments because Serbia, that team is the best right now. They've won five straight in a row. They've won five Masters tournaments in a row.
Wow.
And it's impressive. They're on a tear right now. They're doing really well. I feel like I need to come back a little bit just so I can try to beat them maybe and get them off, and then people can go again. But we're going to have to do that another way. But so that was a great tournament for us. And we have some more tournaments coming up here in the future. One in Mongolia, one in Korea, one possibly in Manila. So they're going to be flying all over the place, mostly over the Pacific this next time. And but it's been great. It's fun to watch these guys build. We also have another pipeline of guys that we're continuing to bring in. We have the U23 World Championships coming up in September as well. Which I'll be talking about with a few of the guys that'll be playing in that, mostly college guys or young G League guys that'll be playing in that. So it's exciting time for USA 3x3 basketball. We're right in the midst of the middle of the season. So rule of the day. Okay, rule of the day. 12-second shot clock. We're going to talk about the 12-second shot clock, right? You all, as soon as the ball goes in or it hits the rim, and if there's a change of possession, as soon as you grab it, it starts that 12-second shot clock, right? So you have to clear the ball behind the three-point line, and then you're into it. So it is fast. It is fast, but you also learn that 12 seconds is longer than what you think, right? A lot of people hear 12 seconds, and they think it's 7 seconds. It's not, right? Like, it's actually 12 seconds. So you got to try. You can take a little bit of time every once in a while, but you do have to get into your actions quickly. And when you first start playing it, you play as fast as you can because you're like, man, I got to get it off. Whereas once you get a little bit of veteran, you take your time a little bit more and understand that 2 seconds on the shot clock is a lot of time still, right? You can get a shot off pretty easily in 2 seconds. So that's the rule of the day. 12-second shot clock, pretty crazy, but that's why you see the hectic pace and why it's so fast.
One of my favorite parts of the game, frankly, is just how fast-paced and nonstop it is. Your conditioning has got to be next level, no doubt about it. All right, Jimmer, great stuff. This was a fantastic second podcast, and really, we're just getting going. So before we say goodbye, any final thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners and viewers?
Thanks to Jeremy again. Such a great job. Thanks to all our listeners out there. Keep the questions coming and keep supporting us. We're having a blast, and we're excited to keep this thing going.
If you want to get in the right mindset for high-level professional sports, just mow your lawn. Just mow your lawn.
You're good to go. Get a mental break.
Yes. Oh, Jeremy, bring in the heat. Thanks, Jimmer. Great stuff. And a reminder to all of us, or all of you, I should say, our friends, shoot your shot in life. This has been From the Logo. We'll see you next time.